from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, concerns are growing over the safety of transporting crude oil by train after a series of derailments. Most recently, last week in Virginia, when 13 tankers fell off the track, sparking a fire and forcing evacuations. The Federal Railroad Administration has issued emergency rules and will reassess new safety standards for tank cars. In California, environmental groups are challenging crude by rail shipments to the city of Richmond. We'll discuss the pros and cons of transporting crude oil by rail, as well as state and national efforts to improve safety. Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Bay Area groups are seeking to halt the shipments of crude oil by rail as more crude oil is being transported by rail into California. The production of crude oil in the United States has increased since 2008 by some 60%. That's up from 5 million barrels per day to a projected 8.5 by the end of 2014. And here in the Bay Area, environmental groups have filed suit in the city councils of both Richmond, where trains full of crude have been unloading, and Berkeley have both passed resolutions in opposition to crude oil being transported by rail. Crude oil imports by rail were at zero back in 2008 and escalated to be over 6 million by the end of 2013. And safety concerns over derailments and accidents with the transport by rail of the flammable liquid, in addition to environmental concerns over pollution and climate change, have fueled the debate, which sees supporters of rail transport of crude arguing for the boosts it provides for the economy, job creation, and greater energy independence. This morning's opening forum hour, we want to take up the debate. Joining us in studio is our own Molly Samuel, science reporter for KQED. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have Suma Pisapati, who is a staff attorney with Earth Justice. Earth Justice filed the injunction to halt the shipment of crude oil into the city of Richmond, and they did so with Communities for a Better Environment, the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, the Sierra Club, and the Natural Resources Defense Council. Welcome, Suma Pisapati.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Catherine Rios-Boyd, who is with us by phone this morning from the Tahoe region. She's president of the Western States Petroleum Association, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. And let me begin with Molly Samuel, who's been doing dogged reporting on this and can maybe give us an overview. Let's talk about the safety concerns first, because there was a big derailment in Lynchburg and there have been up in Quebec, disasters. So communities are concerned.
Yeah, in Quebec, 47 people were killed when a train derailed and exploded last summer. It's not just in places. The concerns aren't just where projects are being proposed or where they're happening. For instance, in the Bay Area, there are two projects on the table in Pittsburgh and Benicia, and another one already happening in Richmond. But this really goes all the way back up the line, where, you know, any place where the tracks travel through. In addition to Richmond and Berkeley, the city of Davis City Council has also filed, you know, said that they're opposed to it. There's not a project there. It's just that the trains come through there.
And there are more oil companies are turning more to trains, it would appear, and there are more accidents.
Yeah, you know, as they turn more to trains, the likelihood of accidents goes up, not just by sheer numbers. The reason they're turning more to trains is that there's an oil boom in the middle of the continent, in Alberta, in North Dakota, and that oil has to get to market somehow. Their oil companies aren't able to build pipelines fast enough, and there are big fights over pipelines. For instance, the Keystone XL, which is in the news a lot. So what do you do to get the oil out of the middle of the continent to the coasts where the refineries are, where the customers are? Trains.
Also, you mentioned Alberta. The tar sands are up there, and there's sulfur. This is kind of dirty oil, more pollution to get out of the ground, and climate change impact. I mean, these are the environmental concerns to a great degree. Yeah,
crude oil comes out of the ground. There are different types of crude. The tar sands is what, you know, environmentalists will call the dirty oil. It takes a lot of energy to extract it. The Bakken is lighter, sweeter oil. It's not as dirty, you know, quote unquote dirty to refine to extract. But it seems to be more volatile. And the Bakken crude from North Dakota.
That was what happened in Quebec, in fact.
That's what happened in Quebec. And the So that crude oil from North Dakota is what is seems to be exploding when trains derail.
What other environmental concerns? I mean, the oil companies want to transport crude by rail because it's inexpensive. All these sources are coming out of North Dakota and Alberta, as you say. There are other concerns, particularly about climate change. How does climate change tie into this?
Well, so climate change, it's really and Suma may refine what I'm saying here.
You sure you want to use the word refine or not?
From what I'm seeing, the biggest climate change concerns are really about the tar sands crude, that it takes so much more energy. But according to the California Energy Commission, none of that right now is coming into the Bay Area. There is Canadian crude traveling by rail into California, but not here. So here locally, the concern is really about safety and about the Bakken crude from North Dakota.
It's also a lot of concern in Richmond. I mean, and we'll talk about that with Suma. The trains are full of crude are unloading there now as we speak, probably. In fact.
Right. They're unloading in a rail yard owned by BNSF and leased to the oil pipeline and transport company Kinder Morgan.
So let's have you, Suma, if you could, Suma Pisapati with us from Earth Justice, break down this injunction, which I guess may indeed come into the fore on Wednesday.
The hearing is currently scheduled for Wednesday morning. may get postponed, but that's what it's currently scheduled for. We filed suit late March, on March 27th, and filed for a preliminary injunction at the same time to force the Air District to rescind its permit modification to Kinder Morgan, which allowed the company to switch from ethanol transloading at the Richmond terminal to crude transloading.
So forgive me, Kinder Morgan is an energy company, and the suit involves not only Kinder Morgan but the Bay Area Quality Management District?
Well, the suit actually primarily targets the Air District for failure to conduct environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. And basically what we're looking for here is transparency. There was no public process. There was no public notice or comment period. The approval occurred behind closed doors.
And no environmental review?
Absolutely none. And so what we're asking for is, basic transparency and open government in the way that California environmental laws demand. So we're seeking an injunction against the Air District's permitting action to halt the modification of the permit.
The Air District has allowed essentially permitted emissions when the transfer goes from the tanker cars and trucks. They gave the green light on this, basically. Yeah?
Yes, the Air District. Crude, and especially Bakken crude, is highly volatile. Especially compared to ethanol, we're looking at toxic air contaminants that are 10 times higher. And the Air District gave it the green light, again, without any CEQA review.
You're concerned. I mean, environmental groups are concerned. Let's see if we can quantify this. About toxic vapor, I understand, and air contaminants.
That's right.
So mainly focusing on those?
Right, especially given the environment.
Which would come from the rail cars, excuse me. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Because the Bakken crude is so volatile, there's a very high vapor pressure associated with the what's called the transloading process, basically transferring the crude from the rail car to the tanker trucks. And the vapor pressure with this with crude, this particular crude, is so high that that Kinder Morgan couldn't use state certified tanker trucks, the standard tanker trucks, because the high level of vapor has basically foiled their pollution, what they call pollution controls. It's actually just a pollution transfer operation where they take the vapor from the tank cars, from the tanker trucks, and put it into the rail cars as the rail car is being unloaded.
How is that quantified? I mean, how do you determine how much vapor is actually coming forward?
Well, there are EPA emission factors. There are standard engineering practices that allow engineers to quantify those types of emissions. And so, I mean, as we all know, pollution doesn't just magically disappear. Once that toxic vapor is in the rail cars, it will be emitted eventually, either through fugitive components in the rail car, especially as the rail cars are sitting in the sun, the vapor expands, or when the rail car is being cleaned or loaded with its next delivery.
Those fugitive components, or as they're called, fugitive emissions, can occur really at any time, right?
Right. That's right.
And that's just for moving material from one tank to another tank, yeah?
Well, here, yeah, that's part of it. The other piece of it is, you know, just fugitive emissions from the rail cars themselves, leaky components of the rail cars.
Let me bring Catherine Reese Boyd into this. She's president of the Western States Petroleum Association, is with us from up in the Tahoe region. A lot of points being made here, and I know you want to respond to them, Catherine Reese Boyd, but let's begin with the fact that no environmental review and all done kind of hush-hush.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to comment on the litigation that was referenced because we're not part of it, but I will tell you that the projects that are being proposed for utilizing the ability to bring crude by rail do have extensive environmental reviews associated with each of those projects. They have to be permitted in the state of California. But I would say that, you know, as the petroleum industry, we really do recognize how important this is to communities, given this increased volume of crude. I mean, it's coming from North Dakota, from Texas, and elsewhere. And I always just like to remind folks of the facts of California energy, because it's important to realize this in the context of the conversation. So California is the third largest gasoline-consuming entity in the world, and the only ones in front of us are the United States of America and China. So we have to produce, as the petroleum industry, almost 2.7 million gallons of gasoline and diesel every hour of every day to move 38 million people around the state. The biggest component of gasoline and diesel is crude oil. Now, we've got a lot in California. We're blessed with it, but it's only 38% of what we need. So we've got to come up with over 60% of crude oil from somewhere else. Now, either we produce it more in California or offshore, which is always controversial, or we put it on tankers in the marine environment, which is controversial, or we begin to utilize one of the most safest means of rail transport to bring crude into the state. But those are the only three options. There are no others because there are no pipelines that deliver crude oil into the state of California.
Well, I think there's no getting around the argument. I brought it up in my introduction that the U.S. railways would be central to this, and they're helping to create jobs and energy independence and good for the economy. But, you know, there's danger to the communities, and one can hardly vouchsafe or minimize that. I mean, look at the record.
Cannot minimize that. And, in fact, everyone, not only the petroleum industry, the railroads, but all of the federal, state, and local agencies, as you know, are very focused on this issue, as we all should be, given the increased volume. So I think people know that the nation's railroads are governed exclusively by federal regulations, and certainly the Federal Railroad Administration, the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, and USPA are all looking at this issue for increased testing of crude prior to putting into the tanks, into the rail cars, enhanced labeling, enhanced handling during the shipping. But most importantly, here in California, we are very involved with working with the legislature as we speak. There are two bills that are moving through the legislature that will do a couple things. First, they'll look at making sure we have an updated plan in the state of California to eliminate any potential regulatory gaps if they exist. And then, very importantly, to ensure that first responders with not only our own facilities but also with the local communities and fire departments have all the information and training that they need to respond if there is an incident. Much like the marine environment, where we have been very focused on prevention and response to any kinds of incidents that may occur, we now need to put that in place throughout the state of California, given the increased volume of crude by rail. So we are very supportive of those bills. They add to the governor's budget a significant increase in resources and authority to the Office of Spill Prevention and Response to cover any potential incident that could occur, because we need to be prepared. Not only do we need to look at enhancing how we currently do it either from the railroad standpoint, from the tank car standpoint, or anything else, but also how we deal with responding if there is an incident so that we are prepared to protect the community and enhance any our ability to make sure that this is a continued safe practice.
We're talking to Catherine Rehise-Boyd, and she's president of the Western States Petroleum Association. There's particular concern, Catherine Rehise-Boyd, about Bakken crude, the volatility of it, the explosions, and the fact that it comes from fracking, which a lot of people are also deeply concerned about. Can I have you address those concerns?
Yeah, and I guess in particular, I think we should just remind ourselves that the energy renaissance that is happening throughout the United States, whether it's in natural gas or crude oil from shale, is an important one because it is reducing our dependence on foreign oil and it is increasing our ability to be energy independent. Now, saying that, we have to do it safely and we have to do it in a way that protects the communities, whether we're talking about the practice of extracting this oil resource deep within the earth from rock, or whether we're talking about transporting it from where it is produced to where it is needed. All of those have to be done with increased awareness on safety, and that's why you have the Department of Transportation moving regulations this year, in fact, currently as we speak in Washington, discussing things around the tank cars themselves, around the ability to respond, around vapor pressure and those sorts of things associated with the types of crude that need to be transported. That's why there's so much attention on it.
All that's well and good, but forgive me, I'm just also struck by the fact we try to get a hold of someone from the Railroad Association and they decline. It's a pretty dilapidated railway infrastructure that we're talking about here if we're going to do it by rail, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if you look at the statistics, there's been 27 million carloads and containers of freight over 170,000 miles in 2012. And, you know, it is and has been documented as really the safest way and most efficient way of moving really vital goods throughout the nation. You know, they moved the American Railroad, I think the statistics I just looked at, they delivered over 2.5 million carloads of materials, only a portion of which was crude oil, safely and effectively. So it isn't to say that we should not be prepared for incidents that could occur. They can occur in any transport of any material, not just crude oil.
Well, we're talking about ethanol as well. I mean,
no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So these things are very important, and as the increased volume continues, there are good things about energy security and our ability to create jobs and utilize our own resources. But with that comes a responsibility to make sure that we can handle that effectively, and that is why all of this attention is being placed on increasing the security or the safe transport and also the ability to make sure that the communities are protected in the event of an incident. And that takes effort, discussion, and resources and additional dollars, all of which we as the petroleum industry are committed to working through. And the two bills, just to note, AB 2677 from Rodriguez and AB 2678 from Assemblyman Sidley Thomas, are all focused on this for the state of California.
I'm looking at an article in a recent issue of the Christian Science Monitor, which headlines, "Has crude oil production already peaked?" And there's a picture of a pump jack drill for oil in the Monterey Shale area of California. It says there is no new abundance and oil supplies remain constrained. And let me just read a bit from this article. Here's a key fact that casts doubt on the official reporting. When the industry and the government talk about the price of oil sold on world markets and traded on futures exchanges, they mean one thing. But when they talk about the total production of oil, they actually mean something quite different, namely a much broader category that includes all kinds of things that are simply not oil, and that could never be sold on the world market as oil. In other words, they're saying crude oil peaked back in 2005, but natural gas and natural gas liquids, including condensate ones, didn't.
We've been hearing about peak oil for decades, and it frankly is not true. You can look at any of the federal government Energy Information Administration that will verify that in spades. So that is just strictly not true in any form. The Monterey Shale in California, which is actually located much more in the Central Valley of California, 10,000 feet below the ground, has 63% of the entire U.S. oil shale located in our backyard. If we had the ability, and we hope that SB 4 allows us to have the ability that was passed last year to develop this very important resource in California, bring jobs, bring more energy to market in a very safe and effective way, would actually minimize the need for crude by rail. So, again, you have only three choices. We either produce it here, we bring it in by rail, or we bring it in by marine tankers because we have no pipeline. My preference would be to be able to, you know, find a way to develop this important resource in our backyard. It exists right here in our own state, and if we can develop it effectively, that would be, I think, just a wonderful thing for the state of California.
Kathy Rehise-Boyd, again, is president of the Western States Petroleum Association, and Suma Pisapati is a staff attorney with Earth Justice. Well, you've heard Kathy Rehise-Boyd say there was full public disclosure on this. There are only three choices, and frankly, it's the way we have to go if we're going to be energy independent.
Well, we know in Richmond, and Richmond's not alone in NoSQL review, so it's simply not true and accurate to say that there was public notice of, all the crude by rail projects. There are some projects that are undergoing a public process now or soon. But, you know, there are a category of projects that are not undergoing CEQA review. In terms of those three choices, I mean, all of those choices point to disaster in terms of climate change. And those aren't the only three choices. I mean, we have to get serious about investing in clean energy. And California has put itself at the forefront, at the vanguard of clean energy development. This is the hotbed of innovation, both in terms of renewable energy generation, energy storage, and integration of renewables into the grid. And if we're to meet our greenhouse gas reduction goals of reducing greenhouse gases by 80% from 1990 levels by 2050, we're going to have to get very serious about investment in clean energy. And the more we're investing in fossil fuels, and when you think about the life cycle of the extraction, transportation, and combustion of fossil fuels, we're taking a huge step backwards.
Let me give out the phone number. I know there are many of you who would like to join us who have questions or comments and would like to be part of this discussion. We're talking about Bay Area Environmental Community Group seeking to halt crude oil transportation by rail. If you'd like to join us, you can do that right now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, the number for your calls, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Projects on the table. Molly Samuel, let me have you run these down for us, because there really are others. We're talking about Richmond for the most part, but I mean, when you see things going on in Pittsburgh and Benicia and give us a rundown.
Yeah, so there are two other projects being proposed in addition to the Kinder Morgan project in Richmond, which is happening. And those other two are undergoing, you know, serious public review. The one in Benicia, that's at the Valero refinery. So Valero wants to build a rail terminal on its property in Benicia. And the city of Benicia was ready to just say, yeah, it's your property, go ahead, it looks good. And there was big public outcry, and it was really, you know, people opposed to the project, opposed to the changes at Valero, who spoke out, and now Benicia is doing an environmental impact report, and the draft of that report is expected in June. It's expected pretty soon now. In Pittsburgh, it's another project. It's an energy company called Westpac, which is based in Southern California, and there's an existing oil terminal that used to belong to PG&E, actually up in Pittsburgh, and it's been closed now for decades, I believe. And Westpac wants to reopen it and use it to bring crude oil in by rail, by ship, and by pipeline, and distribute it to the Bay Area refineries. And that EIR is also going on right now.
Well, how do you feel about all this? You may again want to weigh in here. You can do so by phone at 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Molly Samuel with us, science reporter for KQED, Suma Pisapati, staff attorney with Earth Justice, and Catherine Rehise-Boyd, who is president of the Western States Petroleum Association. When we return, we'll hear from you. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Concerns are growing over the safety of transporting crude oil by train after a series of derailments. Most recently, just last week in Virginia, 13 tankers fell off the tracks, sparking a fire and forcing evacuations. And the Federal Railroad Administration has issued emergency rules and will reassess new safety standards for tank cars. Here in California, environmental groups are challenging crude by rail shipments to the city of Richmond. We're talking about the pros and cons of transporting crude by rail, as well as state and national efforts to improve safety. Catherine Reheis Boyd is with us by phone from up in the Tahoe region. She's president of the Western States Petroleum Association, and Suma Pisapati here in studio, staff attorney with Earth Justice, which filed an injunction with a number of other groups to halt the shipment of crude oil into Richmond. And Molly Samuel, science reporter for KQED. And let me go to your calls, and let's begin with Harvey from Berkeley. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael, for this show, and thank you to your guests. I'd like to make 2 points. And the second point is about rail cars and oil. The first point is every breath I take, Chevron's a partner. I don't think we're going to get past cancer. Proposition 65 says, warning, chemicals known to the state to cause cancer, birth defects, and other reproductive harm are found in gasoline, crude oil, and many other petroleum products, their vapors, and results from their use. And my point about the rail cars, we're always told that the big one's coming, a mega thrust earthquake like what happened in Fukushima, a nine-pointer. That could throw the rail cars off the tracks. They'll tip over. They'll catch fire. I think because of the big one alone, I think this should not happen.
Well, important point. Kathy Reheis-Boyd, what does the petroleum industry say to qualm fears that people have, like Harvey has brought up, about the big one or about the inevitable earthquake, as most geologists see it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to try to do everything we can to minimize any kind of impact from our ability to bring this important crude to market so that we can have people move around the state of California. So we are not diminishing anything relative to the concerns that Harvey expressed. We are under very strict requirements from the Bay Area Air Quality Management District related to our refineries in any location, not only in Northern California, but in Southern California as well, from the air quality elements that are associated with our industry. In addition, relative to AB 32 and climate change, I wanted to bring up, because that was noted earlier, that that is the most stringent regulation in the nation relative to climate change. We are under very strict reporting requirements and have to minimize any impact on climate change emissions, not only from the refineries that we operate and the production facilities that we operate, but also from all of the transportation fuels starting January 1 of next year. So there are rules in place that are very, very, very stringent because California, as said, is a leader in this area, and we are bound by all of those requirements and are part of all of those conversations and are dealing with them very, very appropriately and very effectively.
California is in a leadership role, Suma Pisapati, and the regulations do from, well, at least Kathy Reheis-Boyd's perspective, and the oil industry seem pretty stringent. And you say what?
Well, first of all, this project, there's no doubt that this project will increase greenhouse gas emissions, and that the whole point of California's climate change laws and policies are to decrease emissions over time. So, in addition, the whole one of the basic purposes of our lawsuit is to uncover the true impacts of the Richmond project. And, you know, the Richmond project is not alone. As Molly mentioned, there are a number of projects both here in the Bay Area, in the Sacramento area, and in the LA area that are in the pipeline.
In fact, Molly mentioned Benicia, and that's Valero, which is, I think, the biggest oil producer and the biggest oil refiner in the nation, isn't it?
In the Bay Area, I know that the Chevron refinery in Richmond is the biggest. And you know what? I don't know off the top of my head.
I think Valero may be in the nation. But let me bring more callers into this conversation. We go to Livermore. Kelly, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Great show. Yeah, I'm a truck driver out here in 580. I'm on the freeways 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. And these people, that they don't want to realize what that lady just said. We're the third biggest consumer of oil in the world. And do they think that this can just stop because of some pie-in-the-sky idea that because they have no concept that we have an economy? Now, these people that say don't frack the San Joaquin Valley, Well, what do they want to do? They want everybody just to close their doors at home, nobody go to work. I'm looking two lanes of trucks on 580 coming into the Bay Area on one freeway. It's the same thing on 880. I mean, these people, they're children. They've never got out of kindergarten in their thoughts. Address that. I mean, there's no logic to these people.
I'm not sure who these people are. I think he's talking mainly, Kathy Rehise Boyd, to you people in the petroleum industry.
No, I think what he's referring to is those that don't understand, and actually he's not referring to the petroleum industry. He's referring to those that are not looking at how difficult it is to move 38 million people around the state every day. And, you know, I think transitioning to a lower carbon economy is an excellent idea. We are investing more than the federal government or any other industry in the innovative space that was referred to earlier. However, even as that is quadrupling over time, which is a good thing, still, when you look out to the future, it's 80% still fossil fuels. So you cannot just simply turn a switch off and hope that that happens tomorrow. And as the gentleman said, I mean, if we don't continue to at least be able to bring safely crude oil to the refiners to allow us to produce gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, then his question is, what happens? Do we just stop? Do people just close their doors and stay home and not be mobile?
Suma Pisapati? These people are you people. Then.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that the broader framework here is that, you know, we're moving to a zero emission economy here in California. We're talking about zero emission vehicles, zero emission goods movement, zero emission ports. And that's only going to happen through innovation, investment in clean energy, and economic development in that sector. In terms of jobs, you know, Richmond, as far as I know, has not created that crude by rail project hasn't created any new jobs. But the impact of the project is disproportionately being borne by the local community, a community of color. And that's true for most of the crude by rail projects, both in terms of where the rail terminals are located and where the crude gets eventually refined. As we all know, those communities are disproportionately communities of color. They're disproportionately economically disadvantaged and often politically disenfranchised.
So let me get you to respond to an email which kind of dovetails with what we heard from Kathy Rehise Boyd. Larissa, listener writes, so are you suggesting that to save the environment we should not allow any oil to be produced or transported in? This would produce a crisis that our public transportation infrastructure simply cannot handle.
What I'm at least what we're asking for in Richmond is a public process. Let us fully understand the costs and the benefits of the project, and see whether, you know, these claims are true. There are economic benefits that overshadow the environmental harms. But like I said, you know, people shouldn't have to choose between getting a paycheck and exposing themselves and their families to higher risk of asthma and cancer.
We'll go to Molly Samuel. Molly?
And I'd say just to hone in back on the crude by rail discussion rather than oil as a whole and our economy as a whole. I mean, really, the refiners are not getting permits at this point, you know, the Bay Area refineries, to be refining more oil. It's really about where the oil is coming from, how it's getting here. The crude by rail would be offsetting crude from say, the Middle East or from Alaska. So we're not talking about net more oil being refined. And so I think the more important question or the most important question about crude by rail is it safe? I think before we worry about switching completely to solar and to hybrids and public transit, it's just the oil that's coming in here by rail. Is it safe enough, or are we going to look at something like what happened in Quebec last summer?
Going to some online comments here. Todd writes to you, if I may, Kathy Rehise Boyd, I believe the talk about California needing more oil and reducing the nation's dependence is a red herring. Please ask the oil industry representative if they'll guarantee that 100% of the rail crude will stay in California. I have a feeling they plan on selling it overseas in high-margin markets, thus continuing the shortage in California that keeps our prices high. I live by the bay and see full tankers leaving the area every week.
We are not blessed with all the crude oil that we need to make 2 million gallons of gasoline every day, of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. So we are having to look for any source of crude oil that we can find, even though we're blessed with making 38% of it here. If you look at California, just in particular, I just wanted to put this in perspective for folks. So 6.3 million barrels of crude oil were shipped into California in 2013 by rail. Just to put that in perspective, that's less than a four-day supply of the crude oil we need to meet this demand. So we've, you know, until we transition to a lower carbon economy, which is going to take decades, I'm not saying that we shouldn't. I'm not saying that we aren't trying to move there as quick as we can, but the facts are the facts, and we cannot find anything else, although the low carbon fuel standard requires us to blend in, you know, as much ethanol and for diesel biofuels to, reduce the carbon intensity of fuel. It still is very, very small amount. It will increase over time, but for today, tomorrow, and the foreseeable future, unless we find crude oil in greater quantities than we have locally, we cannot continue to meet the demand of California.
And you say what, Suma Pisapani?
Well, getting back to Molly's point is in terms of the safety of crude oil, crude by rail, rather. in November of last year, the California Public Utilities Commission's Office of Rail Safety issued a report on the state of California railways, and it contained a very dire warning.
That report. It's one of the reasons we wanted somebody to come on and talk from the railroad agency. But again, for listeners' benefit, we asked and were turned down.
Right.
I mean, it was actually a pretty ominous report.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the report basically said that in order to enter California, the trains have to go through some of the most treacherous mountain passes in the country. It talked about 5,000 to 7,000 dilapidated bridges with structural integrity issues that are unknown, and with respect to inspection of those bridges, California doesn't inspect them, and there's one federal inspector assigned to California along with 10 other states, and so the report basically made it very clear that our railway infrastructure is simply not designed to handle crude by rail.
There's another comment, Catherine Rehise-Boyd, from a listener named Claudia, who writes, if corporations want to define themselves as people, let's treat them that way. Those responsible for the oil transporting train disasters in which about 40 people died should be charged with negligent homicide.
You have the three agencies. As I said, the nation's railroads are governed exclusively by federal regulations. So the reason there is so much discussion in Washington about this topic is because of the increased volume. So they are acting responsibly. They are recognizing that the benefit of bringing a valuable domestic resource to bear needs to be looked at is the increased volumes and how can we ensure that we can do this safely. And that's why they're looking at every safety regulation, at every standard, whether it's the tank car itself, whether it's the railroad, whether it's the ability to move it. And then they're also making sure that we enhance in every way possible in working with our local communities, local fire departments, our own resources, that we can respond effectively if an incident occurs so that we can protect the communities in which rail goes through. Those are all positive reactions to the fact that we now have an increased volume. And it does not negate the fact that rail has been a very safe and effective way of moving large amounts, way larger than we're even talking about here, throughout the nation for centuries. So I think we upgrade infrastructure as fast as we can in any area we're dealing with transport of materials, whether it's crude oil or any other kind of materials, just like we did on marine tankers in transporting not only crude oil, but many other important elements to market throughout the nation. And we have, as you know, not only Long Beach and L.A., but areas in the Bay Area that also receive crude by tanker. And we have to ensure that that transportation, those vessels, are just as safe as we are now looking at these rail cars, railroads, and everything in between from getting it out of the ground to where it needs to go.
Now, like I said before, that report that was alluded to by Suma Parasipani is really pretty disturbing. I mean, just in terms of the infrastructure, again, how dilapidated the railways are and bridges that are falling down. And well, let me bring another caller in here and go to Palo Alto. Arthur, join us. You're on.
Good morning. Thank you. We do not have to wait decades to electrify our transportation fleet. Passenger car fleet turns over about every 15 years. And in the next 2 to 3 years, multiple automobile manufacturers will bring out electric cars that will go 200 miles in a charge, which will basically handle most everybody's driving. That may not be the same for trucks and airplanes, but it certainly will be true for cars. We can reduce our use of gasoline in California and elsewhere. Also, the other thing is that the person from the Petroleum Institute said that we will be having fossil fuels produced by the Monterey shale. First of all, how will that get to the refineries? And secondly, why doesn't the Petroleum Institute allow for paying for the severance tax? Texas has a severance tax, Oklahoma, Alaska, but in California alone, we do not have the oil makers, the oil producers paying an oil severance tax to the state of California to pay for the oil that they're stealing from our ground for free.
All right, Arthur, thank you. Catherine Rehas-Boyd.
Well, first of all, I have no issue with the gentleman wanting to transform into a lower carbon economy. I think we all want that. Electric cars are not here in sufficient quantity today, tomorrow, nor for the next decade to do what he is articulating. Wish it were, but it's not, and it won't be. So we're still faced with the fact that people need to wake up every day and turn their lights on, heat and cool their homes, and drive from A to B. Now, you can accelerate that process, but it will not be zero tomorrow or in the foreseeable future. So, I have no problem with talking about how to transform our transportation system and reduce our dependence and also reduce our emissions. I mean, we understand that. I think people continue to forget we have a cap and trade program in place. It is a declining cap. We are bound by reducing our emissions. Every manufacturer is, not just the petroleum industry. So there are things in place that are already reducing the climate change emissions from any manufacturing operation. Relative to an oil severance tax, what many people don't know, and I'm happy to share that information with you or the gentleman who inquired, we have many other taxes that you have to look in when you are comparing someone who has an oil severance tax and someone who does not. We are taxed by oil in the ground, called reserves. Many other states don't have that current structure. So you cannot just say we don't have an oil severance tax. What you have to do is look at how is the oil industry taxed in California and how does that compare to other states in the nation? And then you can look at that comparison. And frankly, we're about in the middle.
Suma Parasipani, with all of this crude coming in from Alberta and North Dakota, one could say was an advantage in terms of climate change, which is sort of the central major elephant in the room here, because we're not having to get things from overseas. We're getting them right from the North American sources. More to transport, more effect on climate change, more of an impact if we have it coming in from overseas.
Well, I think, you know, the true climate change impacts have yet to be seen. I mean, there, by some accounts, we're just at the beginning of a major oil boom. And once you develop an infrastructure to extract, transport, and refine that oil for eventual combustion, it becomes very difficult later. I mean, that's at cross purposes with our greenhouse gas reduction goals. And it becomes very difficult later on to dismantle an infrastructure that's based on increased supply. I know that one of the projects being proposed for California proposes to basically restart a basically shuttered refinery, the old Flying J refinery in Bakersfield. So, you know, and as we know, the Chevron refinery is over 100 years old. Once those things are retrofitted, they run for years.
I want to read some emails here. We had mentioned ethanol earlier. Actually, this is a tweet from Carl who says, don't confuse volatility with energy density. Ethanol is just as volatile, but nowhere near the density, so not as explosive. Ben writes, California needs this oil to drive the economy. Should we truck this oil in? That would probably be more dangerous. Why not allow oil in but tax it and use those revenues for alternative energies? And Gary writes, thank you, Suma Pisapati. You perfectly stated why this discussion about transportation of crude oil misses the point. The only real solution is to leave it in the ground and rapidly accelerate the expansion of renewable energy technology and much higher efficiency of our energy uses. Earth Justice has it right. Western States Petroleum will have us exacerbate the climate changes, which are obvious. Unless we cease use of fossil fuels, our planet will become radically less habitable in a century or less. And Dave writes, I'm listening online from New York City. I'm interested in hearing about your guest's view on balancing the cost, reliability, and environmental impacts of crude by rail. We never hear about the economic impacts to California for higher costs of energy. I know Toyota has joined the ranks of companies leaving California for better locales. What does the rail debate look like through that lens? Can you help us, Molly Samuel?
I don't know that the whole economic the cost benefit. I know that the oil from the middle part of the continent, from North Dakota, for instance, is cheaper. And part of that is that it has been not – the oil companies have not been able to get it to market as quickly as they're pulling it out of the ground. That part of that is a pipeline problem, and that's what the railroads are helping to address. I do want to come back to the safety question, because I think that it's not just about – how much, you know, about the economy and clean energy and oil. But 47 people died in Quebec when a train derailed and exploded. And I think that's, you know, the people who live in Pittsburgh and in Benicia and Richmond, this is what they're concerned about. They're concerned about a train exploding in their neighborhoods.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Molly Samuel, Suma Pisapati, and Catherine Reyes-Boyd. This is a fundraising period for this radio station. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls. We'll welcome Ricardo. Good morning. You're on.
Hello, Michael, and to all your guests. Good morning to you all. I'm bringing up a question about vehicular traffic and how if you were able to have to go through this project of trying to eliminate train vehicles, tanker trains with oil transportation, you'd have to transfer that all to roads with tanker trucks. We have enough problems with tanker trucks crashing already that we've known about accidents that happen in burning vehicles and tanker oil, gasoline trucks burning on freeways. How much and how many trucks would it take to just come into the picture that are eliminated when we remove them from the tracks and they get onto the railways, off the railways into the streets, highways of San Francisco.
This keeps coming up about Molly Samuel, can you help us out here?
I don't think that the oil companies would switch to transporting by truck. It's just not economically feasible. It's really borderline with trains that just have a couple rail cars. What makes it economically justifiable is big trains, you know, 50 or 100 car tanker, you know, unit trains
yeah.
carrying oil. So this would not, if crude by rail was somehow blocked, which would is unlikely, this would not transition into road traffic.
Suma Pisapati.
Yeah, and the one thing I would add is that as far as the Richmond project is concerned, the crude is actually being loaded onto tanker trucks, and those tanker trucks are not certified by the state as having state standards for vapor control. So they're on Bay Area roadways to at least one refinery carrying very highly volatile crude.
And here's a practical question, if I may go to you, Catherine Reyes-Boyd, from a listener named Irvin, who says, will the crude by rail shipments reduce the oil tanker shipments to the Bay Area? In other words, will the rail shipments reduce the oil tanker marine shipments by the same amount, or will these shipments be in addition to marine shipments?
Yeah, I think what the gentleman's question is going to is, again, the fact that we have three choices, right? We either produce it domestically, increase the production domestically, or we are faced with either transporting it by marine tanker or transporting it by rail. Unfortunately, Alaska is on the decline. California production has been on a decline. So we either invest in things like the Monterey Shale in Central California, or we are faced with marine transport or crude by rail transport. And again, that isn't debating whether we should look to our ability to move to a lower carbon economy. As you know, under the cap and trade program, many of those dollars that are auctioned off are utilized for the very investment and innovation that has been talked about. So all of that is occurring, and we just have to be thoughtful as that transition is taking place, how we go about doing it. We got to make the existing fuels that we make the cleanest we can. As you all know, we make the cleanest burning gasoline in the planet because of the Air Resources Board regulations. We have the lowest sulfur diesel on the planet because of those same regulations. We're investing in our refineries and production facilities to make sure the infrastructure is sound and safe. And we're looking to anywhere we can to figure out how best to get this crude oil to our refineries. And we're committed to do that safely. There is all this dialogue and discussion is healthy and good and important and critical. And we will be part of every one of them.
I want to actually talk about maybe new technology and all this just for a moment, because we've got very little time left here. But we've got an email from a listener named Don who says, we capture vapors satisfactorily when we fill our cars at the pump and capture freon when we decommission or clean old refrigerators. Where's that technology now?
Yeah.
Summa piece of body?
Well, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the Richmond Project and why it's so vital to make sure that, you know, that projects like the Richmond Project are subject to public scrutiny is that the Air District, in that case, chose to impose a lesser control, a weaker and less costly emission control strategy, which, as I mentioned before, just simply transfers the toxic vapors from one place to another. They could have chosen a much more advanced pollution control system that would actually abate the pollution.
Let me get a final word from you on that, Kathy Rehaus-Boyd. Seconds left.
I know the projects that are currently under review that have been mentioned previously are going through all of these discussions, whether it's from impact associated with the transport itself, whether it's the facility where the transfer takes place. All of those points to the atmosphere are being measured and studied and have to be mitigated. That is what is required in the state of California when anyone gets a permit for anything.
Well, we'll leave it there. And I want to thank Kathy Rehaus-Boyd from the Western States Petroleum Association. She is president. Also thank Summa Pisapati here with us in studio, staff attorney for Earth Justice, which filed an injunction along with a number of other groups to halt shipment of crude oil into the city of Richmond. And thank Molly Samuel, science reporter for KQED Radio. And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Up ahead, Wendy Lesser from the Three Penny Review talks about why to read. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.